Good morning, and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, where we aspire to be an open-minded and an open-hearted congregation, bunch of people. No matter where you are on the journey of life, your spiritual journey, your sacred journey, whatever you call it, you are welcome here. No matter your sexual orientation, your gender identification, your ethnicity, color of your hair, your eye color, you are welcome here. As I think most of you know, I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's consulting minister, and sometimes I do the service, but don't be fooled, I'm not doing it today. I'm merely the MC. And sometimes our services are done by a member of the congregation, which is the case today. Kathy Converse will be doing it with help from her friends. You didn't give me a bio, Kathy, so I can't go into who you are, but I know who you are. Among other things, Kathy is the treasurer of the board. Not an easy task. And I also, she's also responsible for this, which is fantastic. Kathy also gets that artwork that goes up here, so she's our museum curator in so many ways. There will be a time later on in the service where if you're a visitor or fairly new, you can introduce yourselves. I just have a few brief announcements. Our offering during the month of August, which we are still in, is going to, not totally going, we are sharing it with Simpson Street Free Press, which you can read a little blurb about that in the order of service. And I think there might still be some Simpson Street produced newsletters in the lobby. Let's see, what else? The Gay Pride Parade is today. Madison's Gay Pride Parade doesn't seem to mesh with the date that most of them are in the country, but you know, we're special, I guess, or different. Is anybody maybe going? Does anybody want to take the banner? Great, because I'm not sure I can get there quickly enough, but I will be there. And you don't have to march. That's fun and wonderful too, but spectators are always needed, and it's a delightful, as Tim said to me, Tim who's in charge of social justice now at First Unitarian, and we were talking about all the tragic things happening in this country, and Tim said, this is a celebration. This is not a protest.
The RE students are making wearable UU Rainbow Pride jewelry today. So if you are going to the parade and you'd like a bracelet or a necklace or something that an RE student made, just stop down before you head out.
Great. I will try to remember. Get my bracelet. I believe that Kathy will do the opening words.
A few minutes ago, every tree was excited, bowing to the roaring storm, waving, swirling, tossing their branches in glorious enthusiasm like worship. But though to the outer ear, these trees are now silent, their songs never cease. John Muir.
The chalice lighting. Tree, gather up my thoughts like the clouds in your branches. Draw up my soul like the waters in your roots. In the arteries of your trunk, bring me together. Through the leaves, breathe out the sky. J. Daniel Bowtree.
Now it is with delight that I turn the program over to Kathy and friends.
A few of these pictures aren't mine, but I didn't realize I'd taken quite so many pictures of trees. Trees drink and breathe, they grow and die, they talk and remember. Did you know that? Forests are superorganisms full of mysteries, even for scientists. Today we'll bring you excerpts and ideas for thought from this book, The Hidden Life of Trees, What They Feel, How They Communicate, Discoveries from a Secret World by Peter Wolven, translated from the German. Peter spent over 20 years as a forester in the Rhineland Plots. He now runs environmentally friendly woodland in Hummel, Germany. where he works for the return of primeval forest. In this book, he shares his deep love of woods and forests and explains some of the amazing processes of life, death, and regeneration that he's observed. As you listen, keep in mind our seventh UU principle, respect for the interdependent web of all existence for which we are a part. And actually, it will appear that the trees closely follow the first principle of the inherent worth and dignity of every tree. As we proceed, I strongly encourage you to be anthropocentric. There are 36 chapters in this little book, and many aspects are discussed. Today, we're going to bring you information on language, community, family, street kids, immigration, and health. And he writes pretty loosely. Some of this is direct quotes. Most of it is summarizing and paraphrasing, but we're not going to be saying quote unquote in that case. It'll get tiring. Tim Flannery, scientist and conservationist, states in his preface, "One of the most astonishing things about trees is how social they are. The trees in a forest care for each other, sometimes going so far as to nourish the stump of a felled tree for centuries after it was cut down by feeding it sugar and other nutrients to keep it alive. The trees are said to be connected by a web of soil fungi that connects vegetation in an intimate network that allows the sharing of an enormous amount of information and goods. The reason trees share food and communicate is that they need each other. It takes a forest to create a microclimate suitable for tree growth and sustenance. So it isn't surprising that isolated trees have far shorter lives than those living connected together in forests." First topic is language. According to the dictionary, language is what people use when they talk to each other, and many other species certainly have ways of communicating that are also called language. Tree branches creak as they rub together, and leaves rustle in the rain, but the tree has no control over them. We control our scent with deodorants and perfumes, and it's known that we have pheromones and sweat that play in our selection of partners. Interestingly, trees have demonstrated that they communicate with scent also.
Four decades ago, scientists noticed something on the African savanna. The giraffes were feeding on the umbrella thorn acacias, and the acacias didn't like it at all. It took the acacias mere minutes to start pumping toxic substances into their leaves to rid themselves of the large herbivores. The giraffes got the message and moved to other trees in the vicinity. But did they move to trees that were close by? No. For the time being, they walked right past those trees, and they resumed their meal when they had moved about 100 yards away. And there's a reason for this behavior. The acacia trees give off a warning of ethylene gas that signaled the neighboring trees of the same species that a crisis was at hand. And right away, all of the other acacias pumped the toxics into their leaves. And the giraffes were wise to this game and moved further away to a part of the savanna where they could find trees that were oblivious to the goings-on. Beeches, spruces, and oaks all register pain as soon as some creatures start nibbling on them. When a caterpillar takes a bite out of a leaf, the tissue around the damage changes. In addition, the leaf sends out electrical signals just as human tissue sends out signals when it is hurt. Similarly, the tree roots find themselves in trouble, and when they find themselves in trouble, they broadcast information throughout the tree. They can also trigger the tree to release scent compounds. These scent compounds are specifically formulated for the task at hand. When it comes to some species of insects, the trees can accurately identify which bad guys they are up against. The saliva of each species is different, and trees can match the saliva of the attacking insect. The match can be so precise that the trees release pheromones to specifically summon beneficial insects to devour the attacking insects. Elm and pine trees can attract parasitic wasps that lay their eggs inside the leaf-eating insects, the parasitic wasps. Inside the leaf-eating caterpillars. As the wasp larvae develop they kill the caterpillars. The fact that trees can recognize saliva indicates that they have a sense of taste. Dr. Suzanne Simard of the University of British Columbia has discovered that in addition to using scents, oak trees can also warn each other using chemical signals sent through the fungal networks around their root tips, using chemical compounds and also electrical impulses. Once the news has been broadcast, all oaks in the area pump bitter tannins into their bark and leaves to ward off potential chewing insects. Tree roots extend more than twice the spread of the crown so that they inevitably intersect with the root systems of neighboring trees. The fungi operate like fiber optic internet cables. 1 teaspoon of forest soil can contain miles of these fungal hyphae. The fungal connections transmit signals from one tree to the next, helping to exchange information on insects, drought, the wood wide web is what this is called. It is thought that trees can succumb to infections or infestations, that trees that succumb to infestations or infestations may have been sick or lost their connections to the fungal network and to the latest news. This connection has its price. They demand payment in the form of sugar and other carbohydrates. Their partner tree has to deliver up to 1/3 of their total food production for their services. Communication from tree to tree and from trees to insects can be positive. Blossom scents draw attention to themselves and invite bees to drink their sweet nectar. The nectar, of course, is the reward for the bees taking on the pollen that they get on their visit. The form and color of the blossoms stand out in general against the green surroundings and point the way to a snack. We haven't mentioned the possibility that trees and other plants emit sounds. It has been shown in the lab using grasses that their roots do crackle quietly at 220 hertz. When other grasses' seedlings are exposed to that same electrical frequency, they orient their root tips in the direction of the sound, so that it is possible that trees also use sound.
If you look at roadside embankments, you might be able to see how trees connect with each other through the roots. You may have noticed if they've been cut off. There should be some pictures in here. You can see how the roots are connected. Scientists in Germany have discovered that individual trees of the same species growing in the same stand will be connected together through the root systems. It appears that nutrient exchange and helping neighbors in time of need is the rule. It makes sense to wonder if tree roots are simply wandering around and happen to bump into roots of their own kind. And once connected, they have no choice but to share nutrients. But nature's more complicated than that. According to Maffei from the University of Turin, trees are perfectly capable of distinguishing their own roots from the roots of other, even closely related species. But why are trees such social beings? Why do they share food with their own species and sometimes go as far as to nourish their competitors? Talk about communication.
The reasons are the same as they are for human communities. There are advantages to working together. A tree is not a forest. On its own, a tree cannot establish a consistent climate. It is at the mercy of the wind and weather. But together, many trees can create an ecosystem that moderates extreme heat and cold, stores a great deal of water, and generates a great deal of humidity. In this protected environment, trees can live to be very old. To reach this point, the community must remain intact. If every tree was only looking out for itself, then quite a few of them would never reach old age. Regular fatalities would create gaps in the tree canopy, which would make it easier for storms to get inside the forest and uproot trees. The heat of summer would get in and dry out the forest floor. Okay. Look up in a forest. The average tree grows its branches out until it reaches the tip of a neighboring tree of the same height. It doesn't grow any wider because the air and the light are better in this space that is already taken. It does heavily reinforce the branches that it has. You could get the impression that there is a shoving match going on up there. But true friends are careful from the outset not to grow thick branches in each other's direction. The trees don't want to take anything away from each other. Such trees are so tightly connected at the roots that sometimes they even die together. Doesn't it seem logical that trees will grow better if bothersome competitors are removed so there is plenty of sunlight and water for its roots? Trees belonging to different species do struggle with each other for local resources, but the trees of the same species are capable of friendship and go so far as to feed each other. It is not in a forest's best interest to lose its weaker members. If that happens, it would leave gaps that could disrupt the forest's sensitive microclimate with its dim light and high humidity. Trees group together, photosynthesize at the same rate or amount of sugar per leaf. This equalization is taking place underground through the roots. The trees with an abundance of sugar transfer some, so whoever is running short gets help. Once again, the enormous fungi network acts as a gigantic distribution network. It operates a little bit like Social Security. The cottony web of fungus is huge. One in Oregon is estimated to cover over 2,000 acres and is over 2,400 years old. Many trees of the same species grow close together in clumps, with the crowns remaining small and cramped. Traditionally, foresters wanted to thin out these crowded trees, but actually, they are more productive. According to Lübeck in northern Germany, when trees grow together, nutrients and water can be optimally divided among the trees so each can grow to be its best. A tree is only as strong as the forest that surrounds it. And if you're curious about the fungus that's growing underground, this is an example of one from Hungary that somebody has made a crafty doily out of. And if you want to check it out afterward.
I'm going to talk a little bit about family. Mother trees are the dominant trees widely linked to to other trees in the forest through their fungal root connections. These trees pass on their legacy to the next generation, and they also exert their influence on the upbringing of youngsters. Told you, you gotta be anthropocentric here. The mother trees are in contact through the root systems and pass along sugar and other nutrients. The young trees are usually wider than they're tall, as the light is not sufficient for them to have energy to grow tall. They lengthen the branches sideways and grow extra special needles or leaves that are adapted to this shadier level. When the mother tree becomes ill and dies, or perhaps is damaged in a storm, the gap in light gives the waiting trees in the kindergarten the green light to begin photosynthesizing to their heart's content. Only those who grow straight as an arrow toward the sky make it. What are the youngsters' chances of growing up and producing another generation? Statistically speaking, despite the fact that trees put out thousands of seeds, acorns, other kinds of nuts, each tree raises one adult offspring to take its place. For those that don't make it, seeds may germinate and seedlings vegetate for a few years, but sooner or later they run out of steam. Eventually, a few of the lucky ones that have been carried to open spaces on the forest floor by the wind or by animals may get a good start on life and grow to adulthood. But what if these young trees are alone? There are a lot of losers in thinned forests. Weaker trees that would have been supported by stronger ones fall behind and are prone to insects and fungi. If a tree is standing alone, possibly intentionally for landscaping, what might have been a harmless insect attack that they were warned of can seal the fate of even giant trees. Randy's going to talk about street kids.
AKA trees in our city parks. Giant redwoods in Europe never grow particularly tall, even though some of them are over 150 years old. They are not tall, but they are very wide, up to 8 feet in diameter. Most were planted in city parks as a trophy. What is missing here is it is not a forest, and there are no relatives. There are only children growing up in Europe without their parents. They lived all their lives out on a lonely limb. It would be like leaving human children in care of mice, kangaroos, or humpback whales. No cozy, calm, moist forests for them. In most cases, they are growing in parks that have hard surfaces, depleted of nutrients, and compacted for years under urbanization. Constant trampling around the tree bases causes rain to drain away very quickly. In winter, the trees cannot save up enough water for the summer. The roots don't penetrate very far, and the soil becomes very trampled, and therefore offer the trees little support, especially in storms. As upper branches are pruned, the level of photosynthesis drops, and a large part of the underground tree starves. Fungi now enter where branches have been cut. Weakness equals pests and disease. Urban trees are the street kids of the forest, or as the name implies, actually on the street. The first few years of their lives may be pampered and primed. Some even have irrigation lines and watering schedules. When their roots go out and get established in their new territory, they are in for a big surprise. The soil under the street or sidewalk is even harder than the soil in the parks because it has been compacted by machines using heavy metal plates. In the forest, tree roots grow down to 5 feet or more, but on the street, the roads limit that movement. There are only pipes under the sidewalks, and the soil is still compacted. One complication is the trees will seek out water pipes and waterways. When a storm comes, there can be flooding, and a Roto-Rooter is called to come and remove the tree roots. Often the offending tree is cut down and another planted. Often large trees with shallow root systems are toppled in storms. In addition to restricted space, street trees are subjected to a microclimate of asphalt and concrete. Not very much fun. Streets and buildings radiate heat at night that they collect during the day. Radiated heat makes the air dry. Fungi that help collect water and food are present in the roots in very low numbers. Trees are also exposed to extra unsolicited fertilizers, salt applications, and dog urine that burn and kill the roots. In 1981, the German journal Gärtnerin reported that 4% of oak deaths in one American city were due to the trees being subjected to light every night. Thanks to the botanical souvenirs that early plant researchers brought back to their homelands, and more recent arrivals because of the forest industry, a large number of tree species have been introduced that never would have found their way to Europe. European arrivals make their own mark when human travelers in search of a new life bring memories of the home along in their luggage. Immigrant trees have a special status in the forest. In contrast to the tree species already there, they arrive without the typical ecosystems. In some cases, just as seeds. This means that all of their fungi and insects are back in their homelands. There are few diseases from old pests. The lucky ones find fungal partners in their roots the first decade. Beaming with health, the new arrivals grow quickly in short periods of time and seem even superior to the native species.
Talk about health. Every tree, therefore, is valuable to the community and worth keeping around for as long as possible. And that is why even sick individuals are supported and nourished until they recover. Next time it may be the other around and the supporting tree might need the help. Ready.
Most trees can live to a ripe old age, hundreds of years. But the factor applied to an individual tree is as worthless as applying it to an individual person, nothing. A tree's health depends on the stability of the forest ecosystem. It is better if temperature, moisture, and light conditions don't change abruptly because trees react slowly. But even when all conditions are stable, insects, fungi, bacteria, and viruses are always lurking, waiting for the chance to strike. That usually happens only when a tree gets out of balance. A tree's large portion of energy is used for daily living, breathing, digesting food, supplying the fungal allies with sugar, and growing a bit every day. Then the tree has to keep hidden reserves of energy on hand to fight off pests. If this carefully calibrated balance of energy for growth and defense gets thrown out of alignment, then the tree might get sick. For example, when a neighboring tree dies, suddenly the crown gets more light and naturally it wants more photosynthesis. A chance like this only comes along rarely. The tree finding itself bathed in sunlight forgets about everything else and focuses exclusively on growing branches. It has no option because all of the surrounding trees are doing the same thing. The gap will close in 20 years, a very short time if you are a tree. The energy needed for this growth is no longer available for fending off illnesses and pests. If the tree is lucky, it will finish growing and settle back into using its energy appropriately. If not, a fungus might enter where a branch has fallen off, or a beetle may taste a new leaf with no defense response and the game is up. The trunk finds itself increasingly under attack because it does not have the energy to mobilize any defense. There are storm events that can cause damage even in natural forests. Tornadoes and thunderstorms usually occur when the leaves are on the trees. The wind slams into the leaves and twists the branches off. Typically, extra weight from above is due to snowfall when there are no leaves, so it falls right through the trees. However, late spring snowfall with heavy, wet snow can accumulate on branches and break them or bend smaller trees to the ground. Even in heavy rainfall, the limbs that break are usually those that ignored the etiquette manual when growing up and have malformed trunk or branches that break apart in torrential rains or thunderstorms. In addition to disease and storms, animals can damage trees. Trees are abused when male deer use them as rubbing posts to get rid of the skin or velvet from their antlers. They search out a little tree that is strong enough and flexible. The little tree bark is usually so damaged after days of this treatment that it dies. When a tree is full of water in the summer, it is easy to peel off the bark. Deer bite into it with their incisors and pull off whole strips from the bottom up. There's often large-scale fungal invasion through the gaping wounds, which quickly break down the wood. We have mentioned all of the many beetles, caterpillars, woodpeckers, and other animals that can injure trees. In addition to loss of sugars and the ability to photosynthesize, attacks by insects and animals can damage the trunk with lifelong scars. Sick trees can develop festering moist wounds. Bacteria can move into these areas and stain them black. Fungi are always ready to invade moist areas.
Whenever you walk through a tall, dark forest, you're walking down the aisles of a huge grocery store. It is filled with all sorts of delicacies as far as animal, fungi, and bacteria are concerned. A single tree contains millions of calories in the form of sugar, lignin, and other carbohydrates. It also contains water and valuable minerals. The door is barred, and the door is the bark. And you must come up with a plan to get to the sweet treasures inside. Enter the woodpecker, especially the sapsuckers. They drill holes, and the trees bleed sap. The trees can tolerate the damage unless the woodpeckers get carried away and make too many holes. Aphids attach to leaves and needles and literally bathe in the sap. There are also pests that drill through the bark, such as scales that leave behind rough and scabby bark that takes a long time to heal and leaves the tree vulnerable. Caterpillars can strip trees of their leaves, and now the trees have to use all their reserves to leaf out again. During that year, overall tree growth is limited. If it happens several years in a row, the tree may die, and I think we've all seen that happen. One final quick topic is a community housing project. Animals are happy to continue using trees despite their health. These giants become coveted living spaces, a service that trees do not voluntarily offer. Birds, squirrels, martens, bats love the trunks of older trees. The sturdy walls provide good insulation against heat and cold. Woodpeckers usually get things started on both rotten and healthy trees. They make holes and take a month-long vacation in the hope that fungi will come along and soften the wood. As far as fungi are concerned, this is the invitation they've been waiting for because they can't get past the thick bark. After a while, the wood fibers are mushy and easy for the woodpecker to enlarge the hole. Over time, the woodpecker's holes become too large for the young to get out. It's time for the subletters to move in. Nuthatches, squirrels, bats, and finally owls. The rotting trunk becomes home to wood ants, beetles, fungi. Even if one day the tree gives up and breaks off in a storm, it has served the community well. Even the dead tree trunk can offer a valuable service managing water for living trees merely because it's there. I hope you've seen some of these things we're talking about in some of the pictures. In conclusion, We hope that these excerpts helped you to think about the forest as a social network. Scientific discoveries described how trees are like human families. Tree parents live together in their children, with their children, communicate with them, support them as they grow, share nutrients with those who are sick and struggling, and even warn each other of impending dangers. The next time you're around trees, look up, look down, find the youngsters, find the dying old ones, notice any disease or insects. Maybe a walk in the woods will never be the same again for you. No. We have time. You will see there's some really nice Grady track on the Arboretum. If you go down in the Grady track in the Arboretum, which is on this side of the Beltline, walk down in there, there's a magnificent tree. We call it Big Burr, which I bought and cleared for, that's what I did for my retirement. I took my retirement money from the federal government and we released this tree, which is, it takes like four people to go around it. And it's sitting by itself in the middle of what was a farm, the old farm. But if you look all around it, there's just young ones coming up within, say, 15 or 20 feet of it. There are young burrs coming up everywhere. So I think they're still definitely in a community.
Do you want to do the closing words?
Under the canopy of trees, daily dramas and moving love stories are played out. Here is the last remaining piece of nature right at our doorstep where adventures are to be experienced and secrets discovered. And who knows, perhaps one day the language of trees will eventually be deciphered, giving us the raw material for further amazing stories. Until then, when you take your next walk in the forest, give free rein to your imagination. In many cases, what you imagine is not far removed from a reality after all. This is the author, Peter Wolven.
Go in peace. Greet your neighbor. Drink coffee. Go to the Pride Parade.